Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Now there's Daniel in California. Are you there, Daniel?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
First of all, I'd like to say, Alan, what a pleasure it is to speak with you. You've opened me up to so much. I'd like just to thank you for all your work that you're doing.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. I have a question. I have two questions regarding Carl Jung. I took your advice and I picked up his Undiscovered Self.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, he knows so much about the war on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
How did he? In there, he speaks of this the state and this elite that's running the state. How did he know so much?
Carl Jung was born into an influential family, and his father was the head of the High Masonic Society in his country. So he mixed with those people. And when he got up into the realms of psychology and psychiatry, remember that he was picked along with Freud. He studied with Freud as well.
Yes.
And the dispute they had, that's telling in itself, the dispute they had was that Freud wanted and told him to make the sexual drive, libido, the main driving force in all human endeavors.
Yeah, it's almost like he agreed with him, but he was almost as a counter.
Yes, but what he did was, he said, I won't push this as a dogma because it's not true.
Yeah, I see.
And Jung was terrified. He said, well, there's only one other explanation for the way that humans are, and if we go there, we're going into the occult.
Occult, yeah.
And you see, that terrified Freud. But Carl Jung knew from his own experiences there was more to the world than just what we see.
So do you think that this book is kind of a warning or a,
yes,
a last
warning.
Cry to the individual?
He also wrote a book. It was called, Memories, Dreams, or Reflections. It's along that kind of line where he goes into that further with a warning to the world. He says, I see a world not just with an iron curtain, a wall, dividing countries like the Soviet Union had in Germany. He said, I see a world, a solid wall of bureaucracy imprisoning the rights and freedoms of every individual.
Oh, man, it's amazing. When I picked up his... I just read the first chapter, and I was blown away.
Yeah.
And it opened me up so much. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah. Now, we've got a caller from Germany. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hello, Alan. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Stefan Hartmann. I call from Germany. I just wanted to ask you about something about the importance of symbols, because you talk on different levels, and the one level is normal politics and the things that are going on, and another level is symbols that are encoded in movies and some and everything. And I just wanted to know, is it really important? Because you don't have to know about symbols to read something like Brave New World. What is the importance of symbols? That is my question.
The importance of symbols is that the symbols themselves are archetypal images. And this is what Carl Jung, if you go into his books on symbology, Carl Jung gave more out to the public probably than any other person. And these archetypal symbols, what it means is that every child in every nation, if you give them a pen and pencil and paper, they'll sit and scribble pretty well the same types of symbols of stars and circles and so on. And the occult system that runs this use the very same symbols with slight variations here and there. They modify them slightly. But your subconscious mind does recognize these symbols, and they comprise a language of its own. And this language, when you see symbols repeated or given in a certain sequence, act like a language, a spoken language to your subconscious, and they can actually influence your behavior or your thoughts, because Jung himself reduced it down to conscious mind, subconscious mind, and then the unconscious mind. Unconscious doesn't mean totally dead. Unconscious means it's the big C where all thoughts come from. It's from the unconscious you get your nightmares, where you could do things you would never do in real life, things that would be unthinkable for you to do, but they're dragged up from this big sea, this primeval sea that's in with within us all. It's also where the creative ideas can often originate from. So your subconscious or the unconscious even can recognize these archetypal symbols. And those who understand these sciences, because they're very, very old sciences, can put them in sequences and repeat them, and your behavior can be altered or modified just by you casually viewing them on a regular basis.
And if I can recognize these signs, then I'm able to deflect that?
Yes, when you are conscious of what they are, you can deflect them. And it takes a bit of practice, but you can actually do it. And it's much easier when you go into the symbols themselves and you understand every level of what each one means, because they can comprise a whole range of meanings, which alters again according to the sequence they're put together in. And when you understand all of the degrees of the symbols, then you become... you have a shield up against their influence upon you, because your conscious mind thinks and recognizes them for what they are.
Well, in Britain, you had the Fabian Society, in the late 1880s?
Yeah, the Fabian Society was set up. Again, they always give you your heroes, and they gave the working people what seemed to be their system. But, of course, no one knew that it was meant to guide you along the road of massive bureaucracies, government agencies, which would eventually dominate you. That was the whole point of it.
Well, the collective, they have to build a collective so that the state is grown, right? Isn't that what they're out to do?
Absolutely. And even Carl Jung, who studied a lot of this phenomena, said in his last book, he said, "My biggest fear is what I see in my mind," he said, "not just a wall across Berlin," it says, "but I see a wall of bureaucracy stifling the world in its later days." And that's what we have now. We have authorities for everything, and they're coming out now with the big stick.
I've spoken ad nauseum about this over the past many, many years. But the think tanks that they have, some of them specialize on the human condition and how to manage us all collectively, you see. And in that collective, they have us cut down into groups again. What kind of personality group do you fall into? And that's why you have all these personality profiling been going on for years and years, even before the computer. And now the computer's made it so easy for them. They have you completely updated daily by the stuff that you look into on the internet and by all your chats and everything else. It's all collected and analyzed and put into your personality profile. So there's nothing new in that at all. But what really got me is that over the years, too, I've had people from within these think tanks or have left who've sent me brown envelopes on the quiet on the different cultures across the world and how to manage them from these top think tanks, names that you'd actually know very well. And remember, if you're managing the world, including what you're promoting as new political correct ideas, which can be completely fictitious, as long as you adopt them, you're a good person, a good citizen, you see. Even if it's crazy, they'll make a craziness sound logical by their techniques. But they themselves, at the top, who manage the world, must have the real data and go by the real facts, you see. So they give one for you, the general population, to make you a good, well-behaved citizen, and they have ones for themselves to manage us all. And what they say about the different cultures is astonishing, to see how well they've investigated each particular country and its culture. Right down to facial expressions, the types of expressions, the absence of those expressions in other cultures, and things like that, because this is all used even in cartoons for the little children to see. These expressions can see a lot more than any sentence or paragraph, basically. Look at the simple drawings you get for the glum face, a little circle with a downturned mouth, things like that. It's amazing how the think tanks have literally studied this all with behaviorists, again, psychologists and neuroscientists and anthropologists going into all of this kind of stuff. And what got me onto that initially was Carl Jung years ago wrote about the different cultures and their facial expressions and personality types and so on, and how some cultures don't look you in the eye, for instance. It can be an insult to look people in the eye. That's only an insult in the West if you look the king or the queen in an eye, or with Hillary Clinton's case, when she was the first lady in the White House with Bill Clinton, she didn't let any of the staff who worked there look her in the eye, just like royalty, you see, which is a status thing. But in other cultures, some other cultures, you're not allowed, this is bad form to do it to anybody, including your neighbor, and so on. But they also went into our speech, and our speech is awfully important, because we know, for instance, that if you go into the speech of people who live in China, often different parts of their brains will light up, given the same problems you would in the West, than those in the West. Different parts of their brain will work on those problems according to the language and according to the type of language, if it's a kind of hieroglyphic type language or pictorial language, or if it's a written one as we do in the West. So it's quite fascinating how we're so studied, it's just astonishing. And the whole idea, of course, is to unlock the secrets of conditioning and controlling and programming the people. If they understand these things, then they understand why they work and investigate like crazy into why they work, so they can do more work on the perfect trained society, which is pretty well there already in some countries already. This little quote from Carl Jung, which I'll finish with. Carl Jung, who himself had allowed himself to go into areas which would be termed psychotic today, to try and understand the different compartments that compose the complete human being when they're all brought together, and why sometimes they fight against each other within ourselves. One of his big concerns was the culture that was being created for the mass man. He was well aware that experts were involved in all countries, financed by the same big bankers and big rich, incredibly rich families of the world. He knew there was a new religion being formed, partly of materialism, and he was well aware also of the New Age, because after all it had been well promoted since the late 1800s, actually the mid 1800s. They take 100 years to build up to a new religion which takes over from the old, and with the old one in the West, of course, we were given a form of Christianity which varied a little between different countries, and it was obviously used for control purposes from a very early time. However, the seed was eternal, because the story is eternal in pre-Christian, of the ability of people to break through. Later on, all versions are politicized, and translations are always politicized and altered. And I'll go into that someday, if I have the time. This is what Carl Jung said. How has the death of Christ brought us redemption when no one feels redeemed? In what way is Jesus a God-man, and what is such a being? What is the Trinity about, and the parthenogenesis, the eating of the body and the drinking of the blood, and all the rest of it? What connection can there be between the world of such concepts and the everyday world, whose materiality or material reality is a concern of natural science on the widest possible scale? At least 16 hours out of 24 we live exclusively in this everyday world, and the remaining 8 we spend preferably
in an unconscious condition. Where and when does anything take place to remind us, even remotely, of phenomena like angels, miraculous feedings, beatitudes, the resurrection of the dead, etc.? It was therefore something of a discovery to find that during the unconscious state of sleep, intervals occur called dreams, which occasionally contain scenes not having a not inconsiderable resemblance to the motifs of mythology. For myths are miracle tales, and treat of all those things in which, very often, are also objects of belief. In the everyday world of consciousness, such things hardly exist. That is to say, until 1933, only lunatics would have been found in possession of living fragments of mythology. After this date, the world of heroes and monsters spread like a devastating fire over the whole nations, proving that the strange world of myth had suffered no loss of vitality during the centuries of reason and enlightenment. Well, what he's referring to there is the rise of Nazi Germany. And, of course, we know of the power of the Soviet system. In the Soviet system, it's very, very similar. One was national socialism, one was international socialism. The big experiments, as it was called by the elite of England, of London, really. If metaphysical ideas no longer have such a fascinating effect as before, this is certainly not due to any lack of primitivity in the European psyche, but simply and solely to the fact that the erstwhile symbols no longer express what is now welling up from the unconscious as the end result of the development of Christian consciousness through the centuries. This end result is a true antimaimon pneuma, a false spirit of arrogance, hysteria, woolly-mindedness, criminal immorality, and doctrinaire fanaticism, a purveyor of shoddy spiritual goods, spurious art, philosophical stutterings, and utopian humbug, fit only to be fed wholesale to the mass man of today. That is what the post-Christian spirit looks like.
So we'll take Jared from New York. Are you there?
Yes, hello, Alan.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Ah, run off my feet.
Yeah, I'm reading this book, Carl Jung. I heard you mention it a while ago, Man and the Symbols. And a lot of it, and I could relate to, but he's not convincing me. Because it seems like he was like, I don't know, like a priesthood over the dreams and stuff. Cause
yeah, he himself had been brought up in a Masonic family. And his mother was a Chandler. His dad was also one of the head mason at one point for the whole of Switzerland. He was high up in Rosicrucianism. So he was a true believer, where he had the occasional psychic experience and put down to a whole theology rather than simply take the fact you can get the experiences that don't happen very often, but they do happen. Mm-hmm. And that's why they can't be tested and put into formula. Mm-hmm. But he brought a whole theology out on it. But he also used drugs as well to try and get these experiences, and that's what you'll find that they all did at the top, altered states through drugs.
Yeah, I heard about they use mushrooms and stuff like that.
One of the last books that Carl Jung wrote about the changes that he saw coming, he said that, and in his day, of course, there was a big iron curtain. But we'll find that in history of the ancient system that came right up to the present is the same system of builders, great builders. They came into countries with their system of money, power, bureaucracy, taxation, forcing the same system everywhere they went, and building things, building capital cities, monuments, and walls, great walls. They built walls everywhere
even across Britain when the Romans went in there. And China, the Great Wall of China, Wall Street for the money guys, the great builders of high, high, real masonry, not the little stuff at the bottom. And Carl Jung likened the Iron Curtain of the communist system to what was happening across the whole world as he saw it in the future, the near future, because he said power within any organization, even a bureaucracy which has started or begun with a legitimate purpose or what seems to be legitimate, cannot help but grow like a cancer. It just expands. If it weren't the case, you see, a bureaucracy or even a special police department or anything that's formed to investigate something and check something, or scientists for that matter too, on global warming, they can't help it. Once they get grants coming in, they must try and justify their reason for continued existence, because everyone wants a permanent income, and the higher the better in this system. So therefore, you find that bureaucracies of all kinds and even non-governmental organizations that start getting grants from governments, that they really are paid by governments and the big foundations that work with governments. It's all the same thing, really. One huge, multifaceted, multi-faced world corporation with all these departments, each one must and constantly keep justifying its need to exist another year, another year, another year, ad infinitum. That's how it goes. Every department, every organization is the same. And Carl Jung saw the people, the individualist, being stifled, totally suffocated by rules and regulations as they all overlapped each other for power.
Now, Carl Jung himself was a student of Freud, and he was being trained by, even though he literally was a real psychiatrist, Freud didn't have psychiatric qualifications. You know, he was just an MD. But Carl Jung did have them. But Carl Jung himself, being the son of the Grand Master of Switzerland at the time, also coming out of the 1800s, a time when the New Age religion was really being pushed big time, and contacting the dead through mediums, etc., Jung was also into that whole area as well. And in his thesis at university, was to do with the dead, the life after death, spirit world, and so on. He sort of put that to the side and didn't want that to be too well known once it became very popular and famous, in case it would discredit him. But he did couple, he even gave credence that most of his ideas, Carl Jung, came from a spirit guide, which he called Philemon. And Philemon, in ancient mythology, was the kingfisher, a man who looked like a kingfisher with the big wings and the colors, the kingfisher of men in ancient Greece. And so he was getting all his messages and a lot of his data from the spirit world, according to himself. So you have all these characters at the top who gave us what we now are taught as sciences, and psychology itself has devolved into the most hodgepodge sect, just like religion. Many different sects of psychology blended with the New Age. It's almost part voodoo, depending on where you go, you know.
Now, what I said earlier, too, about most folk can't handle the truth, and it's like jumping out of a plane without a parachute, to an extent it is. Because on the way down, you go see all different things, and you'll be clutching at this and clutching at that, and it goes through your hands, yada, yada, yada. And you'll see lots of things you don't want to see. We've all had conditioning, one way or another, just like Brave New World. And all the citizenry had massive conditioning, or MKUltra. We've all had it in so many ways, because the systems didn't develop by themselves, didn't out of nowhere. They were designed by oligarchs, always, to serve the oligarchs. Absolutely. Another analogy was, it's like coming out of a tunnel underground. And you're going towards the light, you know, and try to find the truth or whatever, get into daylight. And you see a little light at the end of the tunnel, and you start to get towards the surface. And when you see, just peer out the tunnel, there's a field. And across the field, there's a forest on the other side of the field. But on the way, you'll see all these signs saying, come here, I've got the truth here. It's like, no, the truth's here, blah, blah, blah. Now you've got all these different things. Here's the alien truth, here's this truth, here's the blah, blah, blah truth. And folk will jump here and there. And literally, they get trapped in a minefield of signs. I've got the truth, I've got the truth, I've got the truth. And you have no idea that literally the oligarchy has set up all these different fronts to detract you from what you're really seeking for. And it's like Buddhism. I've mentioned Buddhism before, and Buddhism's a certain stage that you get to, the monks get to, where they get into a realm of being, or a state of being, where something that Carl Jung and others can experience or have experienced in other ways, not really focused on it, but it'll happen once in a while. But with the monks, they claim they get to a stage where the little powers appear around you, like in the Christian ideas, or even Catholic ideas, I should say, more so. And going way back into Zoroastrian and different ancient, they're all related, intertwined with the mysteries, as like they call themselves. But the fact is, the accumulation of what they saw as knowledge, from the magical, etc., all the way up to the present day, and science and combined, etc. But when you jump into science, you can't rule out everything. That was what Carl Jung talked about too, because he was arguing with Freud, and how he fell out with Freud. He was the only one person in the class that Freud picked to go into the world, and to the rest of the world, and to be accepted to push the dogma. But Freud wanted to put everything down to sex, everything. Everything, right, libido, and sublimation of libido that caused anxieties and oppression and even murders, etc., which was a political agenda, and it still is, by the way, used by later schools. But Jung really felt like he says, no, everything is not down to sex that humans do, absolutely not. And as we're having the argument, according to Jung himself, there was a massive crack in the room, very loud crack, and apparently I think it was the backing of a chest of drawers or something, or something that maybe culturally in the kitchen was cracked, split in half, right along its length, you know. And that's when Jung says, see, this is, there are other powers than just all of this, that meaning science. And as he said it happened again, something like another massive crack and something else bust. An energy, you see. Well, getting back to Buddhism, certain types of Buddhism, they would go through in their journey, supposedly, anyway, to get to a state where the entities or beings or forces would be out there. This is what they say. And they'd be incredibly enticing to draw you out or into them, actually. Maybe even to lose yourself in them. And they said if you ignored them, you could go higher and actually gain control over certain powers or whatever. But if you allowed yourself to get, it's kind of like the old Odysseys and so on. We will see sailors getting trapped on islands, the Lotus and so on, eaters, etc. And they get trapped into a kind of foggy, and time would just pass. They would trap you. The things that re-enchanted you, and that's a key enchantment, would take you over, and you'd lose yourself, and you'd lose any progression. You'd be stuck there. But you would actually think you had achieved your goal. You're living in an illusion. And of course, the Buddha see, ignore that whole area. No matter what you see and how fascinating it can be, and go on to a higher stage, you see. Because you still haven't learned what's important. And that's what, again, Carl Jung was trying to get across to Freud, who definitely had a political agenda. And folk never ever figured that out either. Most of them, anyway. Some people did know at the time. And once again, getting back to the old idea of what's in people, things that occultists have scoffed at for so long, with the owl, you know, the owl symbol, that an owl can see in the darkness, you see. The darkness being society, the darkness that Carl Jung talked about, naturally, too. Because he was a Rosicrucian, and he was steeped in it. A lot of his insight was certainly interesting, no doubt about it. But his mother, it was an occultist too, and that's where he got it from. He learned from his mum. And trying to dissect the mind, coupled with the connection to spirits. That's why he and Freud split up, by the way, you know. Freud literally was part of a political agenda, which were, it's the same agenda over and over and over of experts dominating and running the world. And the greatest way to do it is to tell you that you're not in control of your own mind, you're rather stupid and dumb. So let a professional genius do it all for you. So they get the star making machinery and they call him a genius, which he wasn't. And you start to quote him and parrot him. And he must be a genius. He's so famous. That's the criteria for being a genius today, you know. So you got to go back further and further to get answers to it all. But Carl Jung, regardless of what they say about him, and he did make a lot of blunders too, but he did split with Freud, because Carl Jung knew, he says, there's something beyond just this humanistic agenda. And Freud split up with that too. Freud said, we must make sex the sole criteria for the motivation of the masses, libido, you see. And that's what they would use as a tool of destruction and then rebuild again. And we've been through all that, haven't we? Sexual revolutions and things. But Carl Jung did know from experience there was more to all this than just basically an atheistic, humanistic agenda where man is a supreme being. No, he's not. He said that there's something else here, the spirit, something spirit, and a connection to spirit. And so he had his dreams, his own dreams, to do with something outside of himself, something much bigger. And that's why he eventually said too, in his last interview, in fact it was, he said that when he was asked, did he believe in a God of any kind, he says, oh, I don't believe in it. I know there is a God. See, belief is a faith-based thing. Knowing is beyond just that. Big difference. Be couple of that with the same, again, these eternal questions where you have Paul in the Bible, in the New Testament, who refers to people who won't follow and who dismiss things just offhandedly. And you can relate it to the general population. Where he talks about when you could give them little gems that you may really, and again, philosophy, you know, it's like the love of the conversation, you might say. But he says there are creatures of instinct. He meant base creatures that they couldn't, like ants or mice, or they're programmed. They're totally programmed. They don't have to be taught what to do to survive. They're just programmed, and they go through their life like the ones before them, generations before them, just never changing, you see. Why that is, I don't know. And I think most folk could be the same way, unless, again, that something spark gets lit in them for some reason. So these are very old questions, eternal questions. And I don't think there's been a country they could write and leave records of things that didn't go through this, that didn't question these same eternal things over and over and over. And as I've said before, there's way more to basic religion. Don't just toss it out the window. And don't judge them by the works of even modern day people. Who go off the rails at times too, in a society that's already sick in so many cultural ways. So where do you think they get ministers and priests from? And then you blame religion, you see. And would you rather have a humanistic society where they're deciding now, right now, it's in the open, who's going to live and who's going to die? That's what sustainability was all about too, by the way. With no divine intervention, even in the form of a person who represents a religion. Huh? That if it still had enough power, could definitely tell the bulk of their followers, which is a part of the masses, is like to stand up and say no. And the government's generally backed off. And that's why they hated religion. That is why they hated it, folks. Then they train the modern crew that have decided to demolish the people. They trained them in advance to hate religion, you see. So there's no one going to help you. That's how it works. This is massive warfare, well understood by military departments in unconventional warfare, as an example. And you're all victims of it, and you don't even know it. From myself, Alan Watt, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.